We're on day 701 without a budget. Illinois legislators ended yesterday's final scheduled session without approving crucial state funding. While House Speaker Michael Madigan said they will continue to work through June to try to reach an agreement, the clock is ticking with the state's new fiscal year beginning July 1.
I just have a message for our representatives that it's time for them to do their job.
I'm optimistic that eventually they'll either have to come to the table and make some real changes, or we will elect people who will.
Obviously, the entire legislature and the governor don't care.
How are schools, businesses, and social service agencies reacting? We'll hear from them and get analysis from Illinois Public Radio's Brian Mackey. Plus, the director of the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services is stepping down. His resignation comes amidst an ongoing ethics probe and several recent deaths of children whose homes were already being investigated by DCFS. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Any hope of an immediate budget deal, and one that would have happened without the extra votes required in a special legislative session, ended yesterday when House leaders said instead of voting on the budget on the last scheduled day of session, they would work in continuous session until they got it done. You could literally swap out what I said last year at this time, because, again, our Republican governor, Bruce Rauner, and Democratic leadership, in this case, Senate President John Cullerton, put the blame on each other for why there isn't a budget.
Speaker Madigan and the House Democrats sent a lot of special interest groups, a lot of lobbyists over, and killed the deal. They gave up at the end, and the grand bargain failed.
He hijacked the grand bargain in the middle of the process, told the Republicans to vote no, and as a result, we don't have a budget.
Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, Senate President John Cullerton, virtually the same thing they said last year. But the fact remains, we're now 2 years into not having a state budget. And the cost of this past year, its toll on our state's social safety net, our public universities, and our economy continues to grow. Illinois is again at a record failure in the country due to our lawmakers' inability to work together. We're going to be exploring the drastic costs of that later in the hour with a Springfield business owner, a Southern Illinois school superintendent, and the president of the United Way of Central Illinois. And we've been asking you how you feel about this. We know you're fed up. Here's Charles in Champaign.
I have a very reasonable, simple solution to the budget crisis, and that is fire them all. Send the representatives home because they're not representing me. Send the governor wherever he goes because he's not representing the people of Illinois. The government is for the people, supposedly. And obviously, the entire legislature and the governor don't care. I am amazed at what ends up on public radio with your very, very polite people. I am not polite. I am mad.
You don't have to be polite today. As always, you're welcome to join our conversation. You can tweet to us. Our handle's 21STShow. You can call us. Our phone number right now for live call-in is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455 to share your thoughts or raise your questions. Let's get this conversation started with some analysis of what exactly happened yesterday, not just with the budget, but with movement on K-12 school funding. If there's any resolution on fixing that problem. Brian Mackey's been working overtime as Illinois Public Radio State House reporter. He's with us now. Brian, welcome back to the 21st.
Hello, Nyla.
One thing, Brian, I think many people want to know again this morning, we heard it from Charles a moment ago, why is it so difficult for the governor and legislative leaders to do their job and create a state budget? What we saw yesterday was, again, that same finger pointing. Let's take a listen to leadership in Springfield.
Speaker Madigan and the House Democrats sent a lot of special interest groups, a lot of lobbyists over, pressured the Senate Democrats very harshly, and killed the deal. They gave up at the end, and the grand bargain failed.
It's crystal clear to me today that even if it had gotten the House, that Speaker Madigan has absolutely no intention whatsoever of changing a single solitary thing in this state.
A lot of folks have watched what has happened in the Senate where they thought they had reached an agreement at the end of that agreement, you know, they found out the governor was pulling votes off the bill and then attacking the very people who had worked on the compromise for voting for things that he had previously supported.
He hijacked the grand bargain. He came in, in the middle of the process, told the Republicans to vote no. Republicans didn't vote for anything, and with some exceptions. And as a result, we don't have a budget.
That was Governor Bruce Rauner, Senate Republican leader Christine Rendonio, House Democrat Greg Harris, and Democrat Senate President John Cullerton. Brian Mackey, at one point, let's just start in the Senate. We did see Rendonio and Cullerton working together on this so-called grand bargain. Let's start with just the Senate. Would you say that she was sidelined by Governor Rauner? What happened there?
I mean, Rendonio initiated this process of the grand bargain. She, after growing frustrated at one of the all-leaders meetings, which is the four tops and the governor, the top Democrat and Republican in the House and the Senate, meeting with the governor, they were doing that last fall, I think it was in December even, that Rendonio left one of those meetings frustrated, went to Senate President Cullerton on the side and said, let's see if we can work something out here. We've worked together well in the past. Let's see what we can do. And they announced it in January. They managed to keep those negotiations largely secret through December, through the holidays. And then in January, they started working on it. And there were the first signs of trouble when they said, okay, we're going to do something this week. We're going to get it done. Okay, by the end of the month, we're going to get it done. By the end of next month, we're going to get it done. And they kept delaying the votes. Finally, voting started. Not to get too bogged down in the details here, but I think the timeline is important. Voting started February 28th. A bunch of Republicans, at least 10 Republicans by my count, supported some of the sort of easier bills in the deal. The next day, the Republicans were done. They weren't going to vote for it. What happened between those 2 days is that Governor Rauner reached out to some of the Republicans. For some, he listened to them and got their feedback. For others, he said, I don't think the deal is good enough yet. And the Republicans were not prepared to vote for it at that point. And they never really got, negotiations continued extensively, exhaustively, but they never came to an agreement. Republicans say, oh, we're so close. If we just would have kept negotiating, we would have made it. Democrats say, the governor kept reaching in and moving the goalposts, kept changing the parameters. So back to your ultimate question, was Republican leader Rendonio sidelined? I mean, these grand bargain negotiations were set up to exclude Governor Bruce Rauner. They were set up to exclude House Speaker Michael Madigan. And when those players got involved, much more so Governor Rauner, even though Governor Rauner says Madigan sent people to try and scuttle the Democratic side, the Democrats did end up putting their votes on these bills. The Republicans largely did not, again, except for some of the more agreeable things like changing procurement rules and stuff like that. But the more controversial things the Republicans did not vote for, the Democrats did. And it does seem that the governor bears some responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the House. Thank you for going through that timeline. I think it's important for everyone to sort of see the process of where the negotiations were happening and then they broke down. We heard Speaker Madigan yesterday, he put out a statement, said again, it's basically, I don't know if it was copy and paste from a year ago, but Governor Rauner is refusing to work with him. I wanted to play his counterpart, Leader Durkin, Jim Durkin, what he had to say.
Members of the majority party focus more on making phony, baseless headlines than real change. They refuse to do what is necessary to pass a budget that is balanced and block change that would move the needle on job creation while protecting taxpayers.
Leader Jim Durkin, Republican leader. Brian, what happened in the House? What happened ultimately yesterday when they said there was a point where we thought maybe are they going to vote on this? Are they not going to vote on this? Then Greg Harris came out. Can you kind of explain what happened there?
Yeah, the House is a much more less positive story than the Senate. In the Senate, they were at least trying to work together. That does not appear to be the case in the House, despite the rhetoric. The Republicans say that they sent letters to House Speaker Madigan on numerous occasions requesting negotiations, and I think most cases didn't even hear back. Then you had the situation where Madigan appointed a team of his top legislators, the members of the House Democratic leadership, who reached out to the governor to negotiate. The governor's chief of staff said, well, I just want to meet with one, Majority Leader Barbara Flynn Curry, not this team of four people. And mind-bogglingly, I think if you're just somebody who doesn't, who's not in the Capitol every day, you're hearing this, they just went back and forth about, well, I just want to meet with the one, I want to meet with the four. And that didn't happen. And what the House ended up doing is putting up some bills that they said addressed the topics that Governor Bruce Rauner wanted to address: workers' compensation, selling the James R. Thompson Center, changing the state's purchasing rules, for example. But the governor says, well, you're just talking about the topics. Those are not, that's not true reform. It's phony reform. You're just trying to get headlines. You're just trying to lay a paper trail that says, well, we tried to work with the governor and he wouldn't work with us. The House, while they did pass a number of these bills that, as I said, address the governor's topics, it doesn't seem like they really engaged with the governor in negotiations, or engaged with the Republicans even in negotiations, the way it had happened previously in the Senate.
Brian, you mentioned action on a couple of things. You know, there was action on minimum wage, a few other things. I wonder if we can take a minute to focus on school funding, because lawmakers last night did approve a sweeping overhaul of the way the state funds public schools. Mainly Democrats supported the plan. The top Republican co-sponsor chose not to vote at all, so I wanted to get into that. But the author of all of this, Senator Andy Menar, spoke at a news conference yesterday. Let's hear what he had to say.
We've been at this now for 2 years. This caucus has passed three bills to end the system in Illinois. Three bills. And it was tough to do that. It was tough. This caucus has led on the issue. Every step of the way, this session, the governor has repeatedly tried to deny progress on something that he claims is the most important thing to him, which is equity in public school funding. His actions and his words don't match.
Senator Andy Menar, that audio from Senate Democrats of their news conference yesterday. Brian, what happened there?
Yeah, well, I have to give you a caveat, which is one of the many great things about working with my education desk colleague, Dusty Rhodes, is that
right.
I don't have to spend too much time thinking about education coverage. So, but I can say in a sort of general way, Illinois has a school funding system that has been described as the worst in the country. That's not really a partisan point, that there is bipartisan agreement that the way the state funds schools is inadequate and needs to change. But like so much else here in Springfield, it kind of broke down along political lines. Republicans say that the Democrats engineered this plan to be a, quote, bailout for Chicago, which is kind of a favorite dog whistle term that people like
right.
to use.
Right, bailout for Chicago, for Chicago public schools.
That it's bad. Democrats will say, look, Chicago school kids have needs just like everyone else in the state, and in a lot of ways, Chicago has it worse off because Illinois government pays for teacher pensions everywhere except Chicago. And go back and forth on this. Basically, this is the same story as with the other items that there was attempts for compromise. Republicans say we needed to keep negotiating. We were getting close, but we weren't there yet. And Democrats say, look, it's time to lay a marker down. It's time to do something. And once again, there just seems to be a lack of trust across the aisle that's keeping this sort of thing from gaining bipartisan agreement. And, you know, the Democrats do have more votes, so they were able to pass this plan, but they did put a parliamentary hold on it. Apparently, they hope that the cooler heads will prevail and maybe they can convince the governor to sign this legislation, or they may keep negotiating on it. We'll just have to wait and see with that.
To the point of the lack of bipartisan trust, the lack of whatever we want to call it, their inability to work together to pass a budget, let's just go. I wonder if we can talk about some of the numbers here. I know it's a little bit mind-numbing, but there was actually a story, WBEZ Chicago yesterday, reporter Dan Weissman attempted to figure out how much the budget impasse is costing each individual taxpayer. He came up with an admittedly non-scientific number, but around $1,000 a person in Illinois. I know this is, can you tell us where we're at with the big numbers of what the backlog of bills is, what the fiscal costs are at this point, Brian?
Well, yeah, and there's a number of different ways to look at that. The backlog is one of the numbers that gets talked about the most. That's how much Illinois owes. You can think of it like credit card debt, basically. And as of yesterday, that was $14,538,966,327. In case that was confusing, $14.5 billion. It's projected to reach $16 billion by the end of the year. And it's not going to get any better if we don't actually match our spending and our revenue. And that's because not having a budget, even though we haven't had a full budget passed into law, we're still spending money. Most of the money, even more money than we would have spent had we passed a budget, probably, because courts are controlling a lot of our spending, because statutes that send money out no matter, the sort of an autopilot spending to pay off our bond debt, to pay our pension funds, including the ones that I'm a member of. I don't know if you are as a university employee as well, so for full disclosure purposes. But there are just so many claims on state government money, and because no one is sort of standing up and passing a budget to put control on that, it's just keeps going out of control.
Brian, we've just got about 30 seconds. What's next?
Nobody knows. The House is going to hold some hearings that the governor has called a sham. I'm not sure he's wrong about that. Everybody knows what needs to be done. We need to cut spending. We need to raise revenue. I do want to briefly return. You asked why is it so difficult for everyone to do their jobs at the beginning of this segment.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would say they are doing their jobs. The governor was sent here, he believes, to make a fundamental change in government and our state's business climate. The Democrats believe, you know, core honest beliefs on both sides that they need to stop him, and that's why there's no agreement.
Thanks to Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio, for that. We're going to take a break as we continue this conversation about the budget impasse. We want to hear from you. How does it make you feel? Who do you blame? Here's Steve in Schaumburg.
The budget standoff is not surprising at all. It's no shocker at all that most of the system doesn't want to change and that what's actually happening isn't really reflective of what the state needs. I am supportive of Governor Rauner and his attempts to, you know, try to make some serious structural changes that the state really needs. And I think that all he's getting out of Springfield is more of the same. And I'm optimistic that eventually they'll either have to come to the table and make some real changes, or we will elect people who will.
That's what Steve in Schaumburg thinks. What about you? You can join the conversation right now as well. Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. We've got some social media going online of different things people are saying there. You can tweet to 21st Show. Our handle again, 21stshow. Hey, Brian, thanks for being with us. I know we'll look forward to your reporting as well today and to continue with all of this budget stuff.
Good to talk to you, Nyla.
Stay tuned. We'll be back after this short break.
The 21st is made possible by the Library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, which hosts the Sesquicentennial Speaker Series kicking off March 2nd. Visit archives.library.illinois.edu/150. The University Library at Illinois.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. As the clock ticks again towards the end of a fiscal year with, again, no state funding, we're talking about today how the 22-month-long budget impasse is affecting everyone throughout Illinois. We've also hearing from you, the taxpayers, who say you're frustrated. We got this voicemail yesterday from Donna in Bloomington.
I just have a message for our representatives that it's time for them to do their job. Education is the key to our future. And what is happening to our public schools and to our universities is a disgrace and will only continue to spiral downward. So do your job or you will not be elected next time.
Throughout this budget crisis, we've been talking to the different people who are affected, whether it's K-12 school superintendents, social service agencies, or the business community. As Donna just said, education is the key to our state's future. Let's go now to Southern Illinois, to Pope County, and to Community School District 1. It's a large district, largely rural. The county contains Shawnee National Forest, runs right up to the Kentucky border. Its superintendent is Chuck Blyer. Superintendent, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you, Nyla.
I know you're in a district superintendent where 60% of your budget comes from the state. I spoke with you exactly a year ago, and I wonder, how has the school year gone for you all?
Terrible. We're now getting the results of not being funded through multiple mandates that are put on us by the federal and state government. Right now we're at around $320,000 of unfunded, what are called categoricals. And what they've done, they've funded us through the state aid, and that's what the governor will say, well, we're properly funding at state aid. But they don't get into the minutiae of transportation and early childhood, the lunch programs, the breakfast
those things
programs,
that you have to fund, correct?
We have to fund that, and we're floating it right now with what we have in reserves.
And so right now, the things that you have to do, as you said, school lunches, school buses, those are things that you're mandated to do that the state's supposed to pay you for. How much does the state owe you for that? Is that the $320,000?
That's $328,000 at this moment. And our district just can't survive it, with that kind of loss.
So how have you handled this, Superintendent?
Well, this year we did reduce one bus route and one bus driver, which saved us quite a bit of money, and possibly we might have to look at other avenues next year. If this were to progress in the next year and these kind of losses were to maintain, we would have to cut a tremendous amount of programs, or maybe even have to think about shutting down the school. I just don't see how we could generate enough local revenue to support what is mandated on us to provide.
So where you're at right now, are you able to open in the fall?
We will be able to open in the fall. However, if this money doesn't come in, like I said, I probably will have to go to another drastic route, because these were all promised to us to start the year on a budget. So we write the budget to, you know, what this money is supposed to be coming in, and then does it come in. So right now we're in the process of, we'll be writing our next budget in July, and we're supposed to be getting this money, but we're going to actually have to theoretically budget without this revenue coming in, which means we would then have to really look at eliminating or basically violating state mandates and saying, well, we can't do it. You were supposed to provide your part of the bargain, and you have not done it.
If you were to violate those state mandates, do you have a sense? I mean, I wonder if you're talking to other colleagues throughout the state, or other people talking about doing that, essentially saying we can't provide bus service or we can't provide. Is that something you think you might get to a point of doing?
Absolutely. There are districts right now who can't make payroll. Fortunately, we can do that. So if they're at the point of not being able to make payroll or eliminating their bus routes, there's going to be a real clamor to eliminate the bus routes. So the local pressure is very strong. The state is, of course, pressuring us from the top. We're getting it from the bottom, from our local community. We want to service the children, of course, and help the parents and do our jobs, because that's what we're trained to do and we love to do. But we can't do it without the revenue that is promised to us to actually make sure these operations work.
Superintendent, I want to ask you about yesterday, about the effort, the overhaul that Democrats passed for school funding, and ask if you have an opinion on that, as well as whether you think there should be a standalone funding for K-12, as has happened in the past, or if you think all of these issues need to be resolved together.
I am in favor of what SB 1, which was passed yesterday, Senate Bill 1, I'm an evidence-based model. I'm in favor of that. However, it can't get funded without a budget, and I'm not naive. So I supported it completely, but they just did not do the budget again. So as a standalone, I fear that the standalone would not adequately fund. I think it would be similar to what happened this year, where they would say, well, we're going to give you more money in state aid, but then not fund the categoricals, which would cripple us. So they're playing a game to try to get by on both sides, and I understand politics, but it doesn't do us much good out here, where we're trying to make sure everybody gets paid. We pay our bills and make sure the electricity's on and on and on and on. So the standalone, no, I'm not a big fan of it, because I think we need to address the entire state budget. However, I don't see that happening right now.
Superintendent, how long have you run Community School District 1?
3 years.
I wonder, for you, I mean, obviously, this it's the end of the year. This is normally a stressful time for folks. How is all of this affecting you? Are you just trying to keep a focus on the students and teachers and everyone?
I am. It bothers me immensely, though, because it's basically my responsibility to try to make things operate. That's what I'm tasked to do. And so I have my board and my parents and the students and athletics and all these people that are expecting things to run. And then when I can't say, when I say I can't do it, the pressure then comes down on us. And I've had a lot of friends and superintendencies that are just basically at the breaking point, and they don't want to do this job anymore because they can't get the resources that are necessary to do the job that's being tasked of us to perform.
Do you feel that way?
I'm at that point right now, and I continuously try to look on the positive side. I think that these programs are going to be funded, but I've been told they won't. So now I'm at the burden is then going to fall on us, because if we start going into a mode where we have to start releasing employees, it just gets uglier. And that's when people in my position start looking for different jobs. Luckily, I'm pretty tough mentally, but I sure don't want to see people hit the streets, and I know that's happening all over the state right now.
That's the view from Pope County down south in southern Illinois. Chuck Blyer is the superintendent. Let's take a moment and go to social service agencies. That's sort of a view, obviously not a positive one, a very frustrating one for our K-12 schools. We've heard a lot about social service agencies and how they've also been affected. John Kelker is the president of United Way of Central Illinois. John, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Well, thank you for having me, Nyla.
You know, John, as you listen to Superintendent Blyer, I wonder, as you've been watching the budget standoff for nearly 2 years now, what went through your head yesterday when legislators pulled the plug with no budget?
I wish I could say frustration went through my mind first, but it's almost a reality. There's very few people in Springfield that thought there would be a budget yesterday. So it was not a surprise.
And I should point out that the United Way is funded by private donations, not through the state, but many of the agencies you do work with rely on state money. What are you hearing from them as we approach what could be the start of year three without state funding?
And you're right about where our funding comes from, but we certainly consider the state of Illinois our largest partner. They are the major funder of social services, and United Way becomes a partner to our agencies, but by no means can we fill the gaps. We're still seeing agencies submit applications and grants to us, and their budgets still anticipate and hope that that state funding will come through. But even they are having to see the reality that they've not been funded in many cases at full amounts for 2 years, and they've used their reserves, and in many cases they've gone out and gotten lines of credit.
Can you remind us how agencies are handling this, how many layoffs there have been, how many people you sort of estimate among our most vulnerable residents throughout the state have lost ability to have services because of this through your partner agencies?
I know that the United Way of Illinois has done a series of surveys of our agencies, and most recently we did it in March. It had been 3 months after the stopgap funding. 69% of our agencies had responding that they are getting no funding or only partial funding. 46% of them, nearly half of every agency that responded, is reducing the number of clients they're serving. So that's every town in the state of Illinois, and as many as 25% of them have completely eliminated programs, which means, as Superintendent Blyer was saying, that's eventually letting staff go, losing the capacity of quality social service employees.
In the capacity, again, to provide what kind of services? Can you remind us, John?
Yes, and certainly the ones that are taking some of the biggest hits where we're seeing complete elimination: criminal justice programs, job training, youth development, and mental health services, probably one of the biggest needs every community has. We're just simply not funding mental health services at any point at the level where it needs to be.
What do you see? I know that it's hard to say this now, but what are the immediate effects you've seen of this over this past year?
Well, I think school performance is going to go down when you don't have after-school programs. school performance is going to go down when you don't have programs identified specifically for disadvantaged children to address summer learning loss. When you're talking about mental illness, your homeless shelters are going to see an increase in service. Your emergency rooms will now be the first place that individuals that don't have access to health services come to. So when the average mom and dad take their son or daughter to the emergency room because of something that happens, that emergency room is going to be full with indigent people that otherwise would be cared for as passionately and professionally as they should be.
That's John Kelker. He's the president of United Way of Central Illinois. As always, you're welcome to join the conversation. We just got a tweet saying it's irresponsible to stiff services Illinois citizens rely on and workers have earned. The end doesn't justify the means. Speaking of the economy, let's talk to one business owner about how – oh, that was from Alita, by the way. Thanks, Alita, for sending that tweet. You can tweet as well. It's our handle's 21ST Show. Let's go now to businesses. We haven't talked about the economic impact of this that much, and I wanted to do that with Michelle Knox. She owns Wind Solar Energy. It's a solar energy installation company based in Springfield. Hi, Michelle. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Nyla. Thank you for having me today.
I wonder how the state budget impasse has affected the way you do business. Maybe not a direct effect, but how has it affected your company?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. Let's go back to when the budget was originally frozen, and there was an impact to the industry. At that time, there was a state rebate program that was administered through the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, and many people had letters of commitment from that, and generally those letters had been carried through. Installs were supposed to be done in March, and if they weren't done because of winter, you know, trying to get them done over the winter, they could be extended. Out of the blue, the state decided that there would be no extensions, and many people that had not been able to get their installations done lost out on the rebate money, which was about 25% of the project cost. To DCEO's credit, they worked behind the scenes to figure out a way with DOE funding to come back and to help people to bridge that gap. So that was 2 or 3 years ago when this originally happened. I think the other impact that we're seeing is, and we are located in the capital city, is concern over job loss, cutbacks, things of that nature, people wanting to make investments into solar systems or things of that nature, renewable energy projects, and being afraid at this point with not knowing where their paycheck is going to come from or how it's going to be funded, how they would be able to pay for those systems. So we've seen some of that uncertainty, instability in the market that this has created. And then one other thing that I can share is I was on the board of the Illinois Solar Energy Association for a period of time, and we had a grant that had already been issued, and we already had funds that we were already working on, dispersing for various projects that we designated throughout the state for education and outreach. And when the freeze came about, we received a letter stating that those funds would have to be given back. And that was about $56,000. And for a nonprofit entity, you know, that was a big hit for us to try to figure out how to cover and still be able to offer the services that we wanted to offer to the citizens of Illinois.
Wow. We're going to have to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. We're speaking with Michelle Knox. She's the owner of Wind Solar USA. Superintendent Chuck Blyer runs Pope County Community School District 1. John Kelker is the president of the United Way of Central Illinois. We're talking about the budget impasse, the budget stalemate, 2 years, the clock's ticking to July 1. If you can join our conversation as well, keep tweeting to 21st Show. That's 21ST Show. You can give us a call. It's 1-800-222-9455. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. Stay tuned. You're listening to the 21st.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
For tuning in to the 21st, I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're just wrapping up our discussion about Illinois' budget impasse. We're at day 701. We just had a caller from Rockford saying that mental health has been butchered, to echo some of the comments we were just having, talking about the social service net. A comment from Mark on Facebook: I'm very sad for my alma mater, Northeastern Illinois University, as they're forced to lay off 180 employees, putting their future in jeopardy. This is an institution that gave me a second chance in academics. It helped me reinvent my life. Again, those was an announcement 2 days ago from NEIU about having to lay off 180 workers. Those notices coming in the next 7 to 8 weeks because of the state budget impasse. We are talking to Michelle Knox, who's the owner of Wind Solar USA in Springfield. Michelle, you know, as we've seen, a question for you, as we've seen so many people talk about leaving Illinois, we've certainly seen when we're looking at universities, the numbers showing that students are picking, more Illinois students are choosing to leave the state to go to school. Have you ever considered moving your business outside of Illinois?
I have considered that, Nyla, and there is one bright spot that I can share to this conversation, to the credit of legislators. And they did recently pass, and the governor signed in December of 2016, the Future Energy Jobs Act. And as part of that legislation, it provides a funding mechanism to create some stability in the market for us. Part of the funding comes from the Renewable Energy Resources Fund, however, and that fund presently has about $200 million in it. And so there's been some concern in the industry here in Illinois about that fund being swept. And some of those concerns we addressed during a recent lobby day at the Capitol, in which we were meeting with legislators, and we're told that that's really not on radar. But in the past, that fund has been utilized to help bridge the gap in the budget. So although it's a bright spot and we're very optimistic and happy that we had bipartisan support and that the governor also supported this bill, again, if the funds that are going to create jobs under this program, extend solar opportunities to low income areas, and all good stuff. If the funds are taken, then that would be a major obstacle to the success of this legislation that was worked on and passed by so many. I guess the short answer to your question is that we really need stability in Illinois as business owners to be able to continue to operate here and to do development and strategic planning for the future. And it's hard to do that with so much uncertainty always going on. So I'm hopeful there'll be a way where both sides of the fence can work together to come up with solutions to this huge problem that we're encountering.
As business owner Michelle Knox, she owns Wind Solar USA. I just want to ask John Kelker, president of United Way of Central Illinois, Superintendent Chuck Blyer, Pope County Community School District 1, and Michelle, all of you, just one last question. Let's start with you, John. What message do you want to send to lawmakers today on June 1st?
I think the message that comes from the United Ways across the state is that we need a full budget. We can't take it one step at a time, and as many people have recognized, we believe that there's probably going to be a compromise between revenue enhancement and cuts, and it's the full budget. We certainly don't need to go through the process of a stopgap budget, which again lets people feel at ease, but last time still did not fund social services.
Michelle?
I think we need stability in Illinois, or we are going to see an exodus of businesses and residents moving to other states that can provide that. And I would just ask that we put the party lines aside, that we work together for the common good of the businesses and residents of Illinois and come up with a solution that serves all. And as John said, is not a Band-Aid, but is a real fix to the problem that we've been now living with for, 701 days.
Superintendent Blyer?
Well, I couldn't agree more with both your other guests, Michelle and John. We need a full budget. It just can't continue to operate this way. Stability, of course, another great idea. We don't, in public ed, we have clients coming every day, and they need stability in our facilities, and right now we're barely hanging on to give them that stability, and a budget would be wonderful for the entire state.
A Facebook comment we just got from Marcos. I just want to know when we can expect tax collection to halt and when we can expect a full refund of all the tax collected during the previous 2 years. In the private sector, where money is voluntarily exchanged for services, if the services are not provided, then no payment is due. I guess none of that applies in the state's world, where money is forcefully and involuntarily taken, whether the services were provided or not. Thanks, Marcos, for that comment. And thank you to Superintendent Chuck Blyer, to Wind Solar Energy President Michelle Knox, and to President of the United Way of Central Illinois, John Kelker. Thank you so much, all three of you, for taking the time to share your perspectives on this issue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nyla.
Thank you, Nyla.
You can keep the comments coming, by the way, on our Facebook page or tweet to us at 21st Show. So much news yesterday. Another big announcement apart from the state budget that the director of the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services says he's stepping down. George Sheldon led the child welfare system for 2 years and will resign on June 15th amid an ongoing ethics probe he faces and following the several recent deaths of children who were in homes that were the subject of DCFS investigations. Most recently, 17-month-old Samaj Crosby was found dead in April in her Joliet Township home, troubled by numerous reports of child abuse and neglect. A team of investigative reporters at the Chicago Tribune has been covering these ongoing issues with DCFS. I'm joined now by one of those reporters, David Jackson. David, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Good to be here with you, Nyla.
David, George Sheldon yesterday admitted failures on behalf of DCFS. Can you explain to us what kind of failures, apart from what I just described, that we're talking about?
Yes, there have been numerous repeated cases where children had abuse and neglect investigations closed in their homes and then months later turned up dead of beatings by caretakers or of starvation. These are really horrendous cases. Now the case of Samaj Crosby in Joliet Township in late April was a riveting example, but since then we've brought to light in Tribune reports three other cases that were similar in the sense that the investigators from Department of Children and Family Services had been in the home, had been looking at allegations of mistreatment, and then had closed their cases and left kids in harm's way. That's really, in a sense, the basic mission of the Department of Children and Family Services. It is to field reports, they're called hotline calls, that youth are being mistreated or severely neglected or abused, and then follow up on them. And it seems that more than anything, it's that basic function of the agency that has really been falling short in the last couple of years.
I mean, as you said, David, these are horrific deaths of these children. I wonder, you mentioned those three cases. in which children died of beatings or starvation after DCFS investigations into their mistreatment was closed. I wonder if we can just go into some of those. In the case of Samaj Crosby, what happened or didn't happen that might have led to her death?
In the case of Samaj Crosby, she was the toddler was 17 months old, and she lived in a very small, cramped rental home in Joliet Township that had six other kids between the ages of 2 and 13, as well as several other adults living there. And starting in April 2015, DCFS began to get very credible hotline calls about abuse of various kids in that home. They were really terrifying cases. We got a bunch of internal records that showed what people were complaining about in the home, and essentially there was allegations that one three-year-old girl was molested. There were calls from doctors and medical personnel when kids showed up with bruises and beatings and beating marks and so forth. And DCFS opened 10 investigations starting in April 2015, going on through Samaj's death in April of this year. And the investigations we found were really riddled by shortfalls. When we looked at the investigative records, four of those investigations, closed investigations, had been specifically about Samaj. Two others about Samaj were pending. And those were the two. The more recent cases were the ones that really shocked us and became the basis of some of our reporting. Those records showed that the investigators were not doing basic tasks like calling, contacting witnesses, potential witnesses, medical professionals, police, et cetera. And the most really disheartening part of it all, Alva, was that once Samaj turned up missing in this high-profile media case on April 25, we found that the investigators from DCFS went right back into the office the next morning and all of a sudden started updating their files and writing up reports that purported to show what they had been doing for the past several weeks. So they came in the day after Samaj was missing, and wouldn't you know it, they file report after report on events that they and interviews they supposedly did as much as 7 weeks earlier. And that flurry of reports makes it look like they were doing their jobs. And obviously, if you didn't have that flurry of reports, you'd be looking at this file and going, why didn't they talk to the doctor? Why didn't they talk to the cops? Why didn't they talk to the neighbors, et cetera? That's really the most disheartening part of it. And, you know, I guess beyond the obvious problem that it's a for understandable reasons, it's a breach of state law to file investigative reports about child abuse weeks late. You have to do that right away for a variety of reasons. It shows what we were finding was a culture in which, under Director Sheldon, the DCFS investigative staff were being really pushed to close cases as quickly as possible.
David, I'm afraid we just have a minute or two left. As we now see, I wonder where we're at now. Do we have a sense that DCFS is turning a page with his resignation? I know there's been discussion from lawmakers about hearings. We haven't even gotten into the ethics probe that he was also facing. I wonder if you just in the next minute or so, if you could just briefly just kind of tell us what's next. Do we hope that things will get better?
We really don't know. We're obviously committed to following up on this. It's a time of really wrenching transition here in Illinois. This, again, is a critical agency that has a profound and profoundly important mission for our state. And the governor has a search committee out to find a new director. It's obviously going to be somebody with a cast iron constitution who's willing to take on a really troubled agency. But there's also a lot more we don't know about what's been going on inside DCFS, and we're continuing as reporters to try to probe that.
Certainly, the budget impasse hasn't helped that. I want to thank David Jackson for joining us. The reporting that the Tribune has been doing, lots of deep investigative work into DCFS. We'll tweet that out for all of you if you haven't had a chance to read through the series and months of reporting that has gone into it. Part of that team includes David Jackson. David, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Great to be with you. You have a good morning.
As we said, all of that information, we'll tweet that out if you follow 21ST Show. Let's just end this today on a comment. Elizabeth on Facebook says, the budget puts your values on the line. Illinois legislators, along with the governor, can't agree on what to value. Instead, they're splitting the baby in half. I think the most unhappy that this crisis has been is to, I am most unhappy that the crisis has allowed the unthinkable, hurting the poor and the middle class. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening to The 21st. Have a good day.